of jewelers, couldn't help but be impressed by the sheer variety and magnificence of the pieces. There were easily hundreds of millions worth of jewels just lying on the ground in front of them. Mrs. Singh breezed into the room, a swish of chiffon trailing behind her. "Come in, ladies. Don't be shy. And please feel free to try anything on."
"Are you serious?" Nadine asked, her pulse beginning to race.
"Yes, yes. When it comes to jewels, I ascribe to the Elizabeth Taylor School of Thought. Jewels should be worn and enjoyed, not stared at from behind a glass case."
Before Mrs. Singh could even finish her sentence, Nadine had instinctively grabbed one of the biggest pieces on display, a necklace comprised of 12 strands of ridiculously oversized pearls and diamonds.
"Oh my goodness! It's all one necklace?"
"Yes, it's such a silly thing. Believe it or not, Garad made it for my grandfather for Queen Victoria's Jubilee. And since he weighed over 300 pounds, it draped nicely across his entire belly." "But how can you even wear such a thing in public these days?" Mrs. Singh said, as she struggled to fasten the enormous Baroque pearl clasp behind Nadine's neck.
"Now that's what I'm talking about,"
Nadine said excitedly, a little bubble of spit forming at the corner of her mouth as she gazed at her reflection in the full-length mirror. Her entire torso was smothered in diamonds and pearls.
"You'll get a backache if you have it on for more than 15 minutes, Mrs. Singh warned.
"Oh, it's worth it. It's worth it,"
Nadine panted as she began to try on a cuff bracelet made entirely of cabochon rubies.
"Now, this I like,"
Daisy said, picking out an exquisite brooch in the shape of a peacock feather inlaid with lapis, emeralds, and sapphires that perfectly matched the peacock's natural hues. Mrs. Singh smiled.
"That was my dear mama's. Cartier designed it for her in the early 1920s. I remember she used to wear it in her hair."
Two maids entered bearing bowls of freshly made gulab jamun, deep-fried milk dumplings soaked in a sweet rose syrup. And the ladies began enjoying the sinfully sweet treat in one of the corners of the room. Carol finished her dessert in two bites and looked into her silver dessert bowl rather wistfully.
"I thought all this would make me happier, but I probably should have just gone to church instead."
"Aya, what's the matter, Carol?"
Lorena asked.
"Take a guess, Law. It's that son of mine. Ever since Dato died, I've hardly seen or heard from Bernard. It's as if I don't exist anymore. I've only met my granddaughter twice since she was born. First time at Gleneagles Hospital, and then when they came back for Dato's funeral. Now Bernard doesn't even return my calls. The maids tell me that he is still in Macau, but that wife of his is flying off somewhere else every day. Her baby is not even 3, and she's neglecting her already. Every week, I open the paper and see some news about her at this party or that party or buying something new. Did you hear about that painting she bought for almost 200 million?
Daisy looked at her sympathetically.
"Aya, Carol, I've learned over the years to stop listening to all the stories about my children's spending.
Wah my chap."
"Hokkien for, I couldn't give a damn. At a certain point, you have to let them make their own choices. After all, they can afford it."
"But that's precisely my worry. They can't afford it. Where are they getting all this money from? Didn't Bernard gain control of all the businesses when Dato died?"
Nadine asked, suddenly more interested in Carol's story than in the gold and cognac diamond sautoir she was holding up to the sunlight.
"Of course not. Do you think my husband would be foolish enough to put Bernard in control while I'm still alive? He knows that boy would sell my own house from under me and leave me on the roadside if he could. After Bernard ran off with Kitty to Las Vegas to get married, Dato was furious. He forbid anyone in the family office from giving Bernard access to any money and totally locked up his trust fund. He cannot touch the principal, only the annual income."
"So how did they afford to buy that painting?" Lorena asked.
They must be spending on overdraft. The banks all know how much he'll be worth one day, so they are only too happy to lend to him now.
Eleanor conjectured as she fiddled with a bejeweled Indian dagger.
Ayo, so shameful. I can't imagine my son ever having to borrow money from a bank,
Carol moaned.
Well, if you say he doesn't have any money right now, I can assure you that is what he must be doing. That's what one of Philip's cousins did. He was living like the Sultan of Brunei, and only when his father died did they realize he had mortgaged the house, mortgaged everything to support his lifestyle and his two mistresses. One in Hong Kong and one in Taipei, Eleanor said.
Bernard has no money. He only gets about 10 million a year to live on, Carol confirmed.
Well, definitely they must be borrowing heavily, because that kitty seems to be spending like a xiao zha bo.
Hokkien for insane woman, Daisy said.
What's that you're playing with, El? It's some unusual Indian dagger, Eleanor replied.
It was actually two daggers that went into opposite ends of a scabbard, encrusted in cloudy, colorful gems, and she had flicked the latch open on one end and was absent-mindedly sliding the small, sharp knife in and out.
Looking around for her hostess, she said, Mrs. Singh, tell me about this lovely little weapon.
Mrs. Singh, who was seated in the corner of a nearby divan, chatting with another guest, glanced over for a moment.
Oh, that's not the weapon. It's a very ancient Hindu relic. Be careful not to open it, Eleanor. It's very bad luck. In fact, you shouldn't even be touching it.
There is an evil spirit that's being held captive in there by the two knives, and a great misfortune will befall your firstborn if you unleash it.
Now, we don't want anything to happen to dear Nikki, do we? So please, leave that alone.
The ladies looked at her in horror, and for one of the few times in her life, Eleanor was absolutely speechless. Chapter 8 Diamond Ballroom, Ritz-Carlton Hotel, Hong Kong, March 7, 2013. Pinnacle Magazine's Social Swells column by Leonardo Lai.
Last night, a star-studded crowd lit up the 15th annual Ming Foundation Pinnacle Ball. The event is a labor of love for Connie Ming, the first wife of Hong Kong's second richest man, Ming Ka Ching. And the Hong Kong $25,000 per seat tickets to this year's soiree sold fast when word got out that the Duchess of Oxbridge, a cousin of H.M. Queen Elizabeth II, would attend, and that the four heavenly kings,
four male cantopop stars in the 1990s, Jackie Chong, Aaron Kwok, Leon Lai, and Andy Lau, who dominated the Asian music charts, packed stadiums, and made it acceptable for macho Asian men to frost their hair and wear sequined blazers,
would reunite to perform a tribute to legendary songstress Tracy Kwan, the recipient of this year's Lifetime Pinnacle Award. The theme was Nicholas and Alexandra, the romantic yet ill-fated imperial couple of Russia. And there was no more perfect setting than the Ritz-Carlton Diamond Ballroom on the third floor of Hong Kong's tallest building. Guests arrived to find the space transformed into St. Petersburg in winter, with an ocean of Swarovski crystal icicles dangling from the ceiling, birch trees covered in snow, and towering Fabergé egg centerpieces on every table. Oscar Liang, the enfant terrible of Cantonese fusion cuisine, outdid himself with his succulent and inventive Ekaterinburg pork, suckling pig riddled with truffle-infused gold-leaf bullets and thrown down a cellar-chute before being flame-roasted over Russian coffee grounds. In this fabulous setting, Hong Kong's most royal brought out all the big stones from their vaults. Hostess Supreme Connie Ming wore a Tsar's ransom worth of canary diamonds with her custom strapless black and white beaded Oscar de la Renta gown. Ada Poon wore the famous Poon rubies against her rose chiffon couture Ellie Saab, and China's biggest star,
Pan Ting Ting drew gasp of delight in the gossamer white empire waist gown once worn by Audrey Hepburn in the film War and Peace. The Kai brothers got into a fist fight again, and a crisis was narrowly averted when Mrs. Y. K. Lung was shown to the wrong table where the children from her late husband's second family were seated. The lawsuit to settle the estate resumes later this month. But all was forgotten by the time Tracy Kwan made her entrance on a reindeer sleigh pulled by 8 six-pack popping shirtless male models in Cossack uniforms. Tracy, in a white fur and leather corset dress by Alexander McQueen, enchanted the audience by singing three encores, accompanied by the four heavenly kings, who really sang live this time. Also honored was business pinnacle of the year Michael Teo, the ridiculously photogenic tech titan whose meteoric rise has been much talked about. After the stock price of his tiny software firm shot up higher than Mount Fuji 2 years ago, Michael took the proceeds and opened his own venture capital firm, which made gazillions more launching some of Asia's most winning digital startups like Gongsimi, the Singlish messaging app. The big question I have is, where has Michael been hiding his beautiful Singaporean wife all this time? The doe-eyed Esther Teo looked absolutely ravishing in a wispy black lace number, vintage Fontana, though I wish there was more bling to her diamond and aquamarine earrings. With all the money her husband has made lately, it's high time he upgraded her jewels. Sir Francis Poon, who was awarded the Philanthropic Pinnacle Award, got the biggest surprise of the evening when Mrs. Bernard Tai, a.k.a. the former soap star Kitty Pong, overcome with emotion from Sir Francis's touching slideshow about his medical rescue missions, rushed on stage and shocked the crowd by spontaneously announcing a $20 million gift to his foundation. Mrs. Tai wore a scene-stealing scarlet guopei gown with what looked like $1 billion worth of emeralds and a 6-foot-long train made out of peacock feathers. But it sure looks like she won't need any feathers to soar to new social heights. Astrid settled into a club chair at the Silver Crest Lounge at Hong Kong International Airport, waiting for her flight to Los Angeles to begin boarding. She got out her iPad to do a final check of emails, and an instant message popped up. Charlie Wu. Good seeing you last night. Astrid Leong Teo. Likewise. CW. What are you up to today? Lunch possible? ALT. Sorry, I'm already at the airport. CW. Such a short trip. ALT. Yes. That's why I didn't call you beforehand. This was a one-nighter on my way to L.A. CW. Your hubby buying up another Silicon Valley company this week? ALT. No, hubby's already back in Singapore. I'm going to California for Nikki's wedding in Montecito. Shh! It's a secret. And no one in my family knows I'm going except my cousin Alistair, who's traveling with me. CW. So Nikki's finally marrying that girl everyone couldn't stop talking about a couple of years ago? ALT. Yes, Rachel. She's great. CW. Please give him my congratulations. Michael's not going to the wedding? ALT. It would have looked too suspicious if both of us ran off to the U.S. so soon after our last trip. BTW. He was thrilled to meet you last night. Apparently, he's a huge fan of yours and couldn't believe I was the one making the introductions. CW. Did he not know we were once engaged? ALT. Of course. But I don't think it really clicked in his mind until last night. He associates you with his tech crowd, so he couldn't really conceive of the two of us actually knowing each other. You really boosted my street cred. CW. He's a nice chap. And congrats again on his award. He's really made some smart moves. ALT. You should have told him that. Why were you being so quiet last night? CW. Was I? ALT.
You hardly said a thing and looked like you couldn't wait to run off.
CW, I was trying to avoid Connie Ming, who's already trying to commit me to underwriting next year's ball. And I guess I wasn't expecting to see you there.
ALT.
Of course I would be there to support Michael.
CW.
Yes, but I thought you didn't do charity galas, especially in Hong Kong. Wasn't it the rule in your family never to attend these big to-dos?
ALT.
The rule is more relaxed now that I'm a boring housewife. When I was younger, my parents didn't want pictures of me appearing everywhere for their paranoid security reasons. And they didn't want me to associate with the fast party crowd. The international Chinese trash, as Mum called it.
CW. People like me.
ALT. LOL.
CW.
Last night was especially bad. Lots of people your mom wouldn't approve of.
ALT.
It wasn't so bad.
CW.
Really? I saw you were seated at Ada Poon's table.
ALT.
Okay, I confess, that was awful.
CW.
Ha ha ha.
ALT.
Ada and her Tai Tai friends totally froze me out for the first hour.
A Cantonese term that means supreme wife, implying a situation where a man has several wives, but no longer strictly interpreted, since polygamy has been banned in Hong Kong since 1971. Nowadays, Tai Tai refers to a privileged lady of means, usually of high standing within Hong Kong society. A prerequisite of being a Tai Tai is being married to a wealthy man, thus allowing the Tai Tai a tremendous amount of leisure time to lunch, shop, visit the beauty parlor, decorate, gossip, establish a pet charity, enjoy afternoon tea, take tennis lessons, schedule tutors for her children, and terrorize her maids. Not necessarily in that order.
CW.
Did you tell them you were from Singapore?
ALT.
Michael's bio was in the program, and everyone knew I was his wife. I know Hong Kongers have become a bit touchy ever since Singapore's airport was voted the world's best.
CW.
Well, in my opinion, we still have better shopping at our airport. Who needs a free cinema or an orchid garden when you can go from Lo to Longchamp in less than 10 steps? Anyway, the real reason the ladies gave you the cold shoulder was because you didn't go to St. Paul's, St. Stephen's, or Diocesans. They didn't know where to rank you in their hierarchy.
ALT. But there is such a thing as common courtesy. We're at an event for charity, for Christ's sake.
All the ladies could not stop trying to outdo each other, bragging about the huge fines they all had to pay on their illegal basements. It was such a bore.
But then, after the Duchess made her speech, she came right up to my table and said,
Astrid, I thought that was you. What are you doing here? I'm seeing your parents for lunch next week at Stoker and Amanda's. Will you be at Chatsworth too? And that's all it took. Suddenly the Tai Tais could not leave me alone.
CW. I bet they couldn't.
ALT.
Hong Kong women fascinate me. The style here really is so different than in Singapore. It's a studied opulence that's just breathtaking to behold.
I don't think I've seen so much jewelry in one room at one time. Truly felt like the Russian Revolution, when all the aristocrats were fleeing the country with every piece of jewelry they had, some sewn into their clothing.
CW.
They really piled it on, didn't they?
What did you think of all those tiaras?
ALT.
I don't think a woman should wear a tiara unless it's been in her family for several generations.
CW. Not sure if you look at our gossip columns, but there is this fool named Leonardo Lai.
ALT. Ha ha. Yes, my cousin Cecilia just sent me the article.
CW.
Leonardo obviously had no clue who you were and couldn't even get your name right. But he's apparently concerned that you don't have enough jewelry.
LOL.
ALT. I'm so glad he misspelled my name. Mum would be furious to see me in the gossip columns. I guess Leonardo wasn't impressed by pieces from the actual imperial collection. My earrings used to belong to Dowager Empress Maria Fyodorovna.
CW:
Of course they did. I noticed them immediately. They look like something I would have bought you back in our London days, from that little vintage jewelry shop in the Burlington Arcade that you loved poking around in.
You were the best-dressed woman at the ball. No contest.
ALT:
You're too sweet.
But come on. I did not go all out like some of those Hong Kong fashionistas who wore specially commissioned gowns in the style of Catherine the Great or whomever.
CW:
You've always dressed to please yourself. That's precisely why you looked great.
You and Kitty Pong, of course.
ALT:
You're funny. I actually thought she looked fantastic. Her dress was very Josephine Baker.
CW: She was naked, except for all those feathers and emeralds.
ALT: The dress worked, but stealing the spotlight from Francis Poon was rather shameless.
I was afraid poor old Francis was going to have a heart attack when she rushed on stage and grabbed the microphone from him while he was trying to make his speech.
CW: Ada Poon should have jumped up and slapped Kitty Pong just like any good third wife would.
ALT:
She was too weighed down by all that jewelry to do any jumping.
CW:
I really do wonder what's happened to Bernard Tai.
Why is Kitty everywhere but he's not?
Is he even still alive?
ALT:
She's probably got him chained up in a dungeon somewhere with a ball gag in his mouth.
CW:
Astrid Leong, you shock me.
ALT:
Sorry, I've been reading too much Marquis de Sade lately.
Dare I ask where your wife was? Am I ever going to meet the legendary Isabel Wu?
CW: Isabel is too snotty to go to events like these. She only goes to 2 or 3 of the old guard balls every year.
ALT:
LOL, old guard balls. I don't even want to tell you what just came into my head.
CW:
Sir Francis Poon?
ALT:
You're terrible. Oh, my cousin's waving me over. It's boarding time.
CW:
Why you still fly commercial, I'll never understand.
ALT:
We're Leongs. That's why.
My dad thinks it would be shameful if the family is seen flying private since he is a public servant. And he claims it's far safer in a big commercial airliner than in a small one.
CW: I think it's much safer on your own plane with a dedicated ground crew. You get there in half the time and feel less jet lag.
ALT:
I don't ever get jet lag, remember?
Also, we don't have Charlie Wu, $$$$.
CW:
That's a funny one. You Leongs could buy me for breakfast any day. Anyway, have a good flight.
ALT:
Nice chatting. Next time we're in HK, I promise I'll give you more notice.
CW:
Okay.
ALT:
Michael and I will take you to dinner. There's this great Teochew place in Hutchison House that my cousin keeps telling me about.
CW:
No, no, no. My town, my treat.
ALT:
We'll fight about it later. XO.
Charlie logged off his computer and swiveled his chair around to face the window. From his office on the 55th floor of Wuthering Towers, he had a sweeping view of the harbor and could see every eastbound flight that departed out of Hong Kong International Airport. He stared into the horizon, scanning each plane that was taking off, searching for Astrid.
I should never have IM'd her today, he told himself. Why in the world do I keep doing this to myself? Every time I hear her voice, every time I read an email or even exchange a text with her, it's pure torture. I tried to stop. I tried to leave her alone. But seeing her again for the first time in so long, entering the room in nothing but black lace against glowing bare skin, I was just hit so hard by her beauty.
When at last Charlie saw the double-story Airbus A380 gliding through the sky with its telltale navy and gold markings, he found himself inexplicably picking up the phone and calling his private hangar.
Johnny, could you please have the plane ready within an hour? I need to go to Los Angeles.
I'll surprise Astrid at the arrival lounge with red roses just like I did back in our university days in London. This time, there will be 500 red roses awaiting her when she gets off the plane. I'll take her to Jelena for lunch, and then maybe we can rent a car and drive to some amazing spa up the coast for a few days. It will be just like the old days, when we used to take the Volante over to France and drive all over the Loire Valley, exploring ancient castles together, going to wine tastings. Oh, what the hell am I thinking? I'm married to Isabel, and Astrid is married to Michael. I am the biggest idiot in the whole world. For one moment, one brief moment, I had a chance to win her back when her insecure husband was feeling too poor to afford her. But instead, I made him a fortune. Christ, what was I thinking when I did that? And now they are back together, so damn happy and perfectly in love. And here I am, with a wife who hates me. Miserable as fuck.
Chapter 9. The Lock Club. Hong Kong, March 9, 2013. Kitty Pong was brimming over with anticipation as she stood in the crowded elevator. For years, she had heard about this place, and at long last, she was about to have lunch here. Located on the fifth floor of a nondescript office building on Wyndham Street, the Lock Club was Hong Kong's most exclusive dining club, the Holy of Holies. And its members consisted of the creme de la creme of Hong Kong society and the international jet set. Unlike other private dining clubs, in a city where people are almost as obsessed with food as they are with status, perhaps the best-kept secret of the dining scene is that the finest cuisine arguably isn't found at the Michelin-starred restaurants in five-star hotels, but rather at private dining clubs. These members-only establishments are sanctuaries of luxury hidden away on upper floors of office buildings where the famous and well-heeled gather to enjoy their meals far from the prying eyes of paparazzi. These clubs often have years-long waiting lists for membership, and only the best concierges at the top hotels can be bribed into getting you a special guest membership, provided you are fabulous enough. Where fame or a fat checkbook would gain you instant membership, the Lock played by its own rules. The place didn't even have a membership waiting list. You had to be invited to join by its strict and secretive board. And even feigning a passing interest in belonging could mean that you would never, ever be asked. Back in the days when she had a minor role on the soap opera Many Splendid Things, Kitty often overheard Sammy Hui, the show's biggest star, brag about her lunches at the Lock and how she was seated in the same room as the Queen of Bhutan or Liu Ming's latest mistress. Kitty couldn't wait to see which sumptuous room she would be seated in today, and which important personages would be dining at the tables around her. Would they all be savoring the specialty of the house? Turtle soup served in camphor wood cups? It was such a stroke of luck that she had been seated at Evangeline de Ayala's table at the Pinnacle Ball. Evangeline was the glamorous young wife of Pedro Paulo de Ayala, a scion of one of the oldest real estate families in the Philippines. And though the couple were fairly recent transplants to Hong Kong, via London where Pedro Paulo had worked at Rothschild's, their aristocratic connections, not to mention aristocratic-sounding surname, had made them popular new members at the club. Evangeline appeared to be wowed by Kitty's big donation to Sir Francis Poon's foundation, and when she suggested meeting for lunch at the Lock, Kitty wondered if she was finally going to be invited to join. After all, she had in 2 short months transformed herself into Hong Kong's leading art collector and philanthropist. The elevator door finally opened, and Kitty pranced into the front foyer of the club, With its glossy ebony paneled walls and dramatic black marble and steel staircase leading up to the fabled dining room, one of the hosts at the reception desk smiled at her.
Good afternoon. May I help you?
Yes. I'm meeting Miss De Ayala for lunch.
Mrs. De Ayala, the host officiously corrected.
Yes, I meant Mrs.,
Kitty replied nervously.
I'm afraid she isn't here yet. Please have a seat in our parlor, and we'll show you to the dining room as soon as she arrives.
Kitty walked into a room with silk-covered walls and took a seat in the middle of the red Le Corbusier sofa so that she could show herself off to best advantage.
A few of the ladies coming off the elevator stared at her intently as they passed by, and she felt certain it was because of the outfit she had taken such care in choosing. She had opted for a sleeveless Gian Battista Valli black and red floral print dress, a red Sally knotted lambskin clutch, and Charlotte Olympia red flats with a gold buckle. Her only jewelry was a pair of cabochon ruby earrings from Solange Azagari Partridge. Even with a peekaboo slit on the side of her dress, the look bordered on demure, and she dared any uppity tie-tie to criticize her today. Unbeknownst to Kitty, one of the ladies in the elevator had been Rosie Ho, who was on her way to join Ada Poon and a few of their former Mary No classmates for lunch. Rosie made a mad dash to the dining room and breathlessly announced,
"Girls, you're never going to believe who is sitting in the parlor right now. Three guesses. Quick, quick!"
"Give us some sort of clue," Lainey Liu said.
"She's wearing a floral print dress, and she definitely had breast reduction surgery."
"Oh my God, is it that lesbian girlfriend of Bibi Chow's?" Tessa Chen cackled.
"No, even better."
"Hiya, tell us,"
the ladies implored.
"It's Kitty Pong,"
Rosie triumphantly announced.
Ada's face went white with contempt. Lainey seethed. "Mat lan ye?"
Cantonese for "what the fuck."
"How dare she show up here after the stunt she pulled the other night?"
"Who was stupid enough to bring her?"
Tessa asked.
Ada rose slowly from the table and smiled tightly at her lunch companions.
"Will you excuse me for just 1 minute? Please keep eating. Don't let the delicious turtle soup get cold."
Evangeline De Ayala entered the parlor in a pretty black and white long long shift dress and gave Kitty a double cheek kiss. "So sorry to be late. I have no good excuse, except that I'm always on Manila time."
"Don't worry, I was just admiring the art,"
Kitty graciously responded. "Quite cool, isn't it? Do you collect?"
"I'm just beginning to, so I'm trying to educate myself," Kitty said modestly,
wondering whether Evangeline was just pretending not to know that she had recently bought the most expensive painting in all of Asia. The ladies approached the reception desk together, and the same host greeted them warmly.
"Good afternoon, Mrs. De Ayala. Joining us for lunch today?"
"Yes, just the two of us," Evangeline replied.
"Wonderful. Please come with me," the host said, escorting the ladies up the curved marble staircase. When they entered the dining room, Kitty noticed quite a few people gawking at them. The manager of the club came rushing toward them with a look of importance.
"Goody. He's coming to welcome me personally to the club," Kitty thought.
"Mrs. De Ayala, I do apologize, but there seems to have been a huge mix-up with our computerized reservation system. I'm afraid we are completely overbooked today and will not be able to accommodate you for lunch."
The host looked taken aback by his manager's declaration, but said nothing.
Evangeline looked puzzled.
"But I made the booking 2 days ago, and no one called to inform me."
"Yes, I am aware of that. We're truly sorry. But if you'll allow me, I have made a booking for you right around the corner at Yang Kee on Wellington Street. They have a lovely table awaiting you, and I hope you will allow us to treat you to lunch, to make up for the inconvenience."
"Surely you can seat us for a quick lunch here? We're just two,
and I see a few empty tables along the window?
Evangeline said hopefully.
Unfortunately, those tables have already been spoken for. Once again, please accept my apologies, and I do hope you enjoy Yang Ki. Be sure to order their fabulous roast goose, the manager said, as he authoritatively steered Kitty and Evangeline toward the staircase.
As they left the club, Evangeline was still perplexed.
How bizarre! I'm so sorry, nothing like that has ever happened before, but the lock does have rather strange rules. Now let me just text my driver about our change of plans.
As Evangeline got out her phone, she saw that her husband was trying to call.
Hey, sweetheart.
Filipino slang for sweetheart.
How are you? The strangest thing just happened.
Evangeline cooed into the phone. Then she jumped at the torrent of cursing that came from the other end.
Nothing! We did nothing! She said in a defensive tone.
Kitty could hear Evangeline's husband continue to rant.
I can't explain. I don't know what happened.
Evangeline kept sputtering into the phone, her face getting paler and paler. Finally, she put her phone down and gave Kitty a rather dazed look.
I'm sorry, but I'm suddenly not feeling too well. Do you mind if we take a rain check on lunch?
Of course. Is everything okay?
Kitty asked, rather concerned for her new friend.
That was my husband. Our membership at the lock club has just been revoked.
After Evangeline's driver had picked her up, Kitty stood at the curb trying to process what had just happened. She had woken up this morning feeling so happy and excited, and now she was rather crestfallen that her lunch plans had gone so awry. Poor Evangeline. What an awful thing to happen to her. Just as she was about to call for her driver, Kitty noticed a gray-haired woman in a dowdy-looking pantsuit smiling at her.
Are you okay?
The woman asked.
Yes,
Kitty responded, a little confused. Did she know her from somewhere?
I was just at lunch at the lock, and I couldn't help but notice what happened in the dining room,
the woman said by way of introduction.
Yes, it's quite strange, isn't it? I feel so bad for my friend.
How so?
She didn't realize that she had lost her membership at the club, and she was trying to take me to lunch there. I think she must feel very embarrassed right now.
Evangeline de Ayala was kicked out of the club? The woman said incredulously.
Oh, you know her? Yes, right after we left the club. Her husband called with the news. He must have done something terribly wrong for them to be kicked out without any notice like that.
The woman paused for a few moments, as if she was trying to ascertain whether Kitty was being serious.
My poor dear, you are completely out to sea. You really have no clue what actually happened, do you? In the history of the club, they've only ever revoked a membership 3 times. Today was the 4th. The De Ayalas obviously were kicked out because Evangeline tried to bring you to the club.
Kitty looked incredulous.
Me? What a silly idea. That was my first time setting foot in the club. What did I have to do with it?
The woman shook her head pitifully. The fact that you don't even realize this makes me extremely sad. But I think I can help you.
What do you mean help me? Who are you?
I'm Corinna Kotang.
As in Kotang Park?
Yes, and Kotang Road, and the Kotang Wing at Queen Mary Hospital. Now come with me. I know you must be starving. I'll explain everything over yum cha. The Cantonese phrase literally means drink tea, but in Hong Kong, it usually connotes a lunchtime meal of tea and dim sum. Corinna led Kitty down On Lan Street and into an alley behind New World Tower. Taking the service elevator up 3 floors, they were deposited at the back entrance of Sui Hong Village Restaurant, where VIPs could pass through unnoticed. The manager recognized Corinna at once and rushed up to her, bowing deeply. Miss Kotang, such an honor to have you dining with us today.
Thank you, Mr. Tong. Can we have a private room, please?
Certainly. Please come with me.
How is your mother these days? Please send my best wishes to her. The manager said effusively as he escorted them down a hallway. The ladies were shown to a private dining room done up in subtle shades of beige, with a large round table and a flat-screen television along the back wall set on CNBC with the volume on mute.
I will let the chef know that you are here. I'm sure he will want to send out all his special dishes.
Please thank him for me in advance. Now could you please turn off the television? Corinna instructed.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Of course, the manager said,
lunging for the remote control as if it were the most offensive thing in the world. After hot towels were ceremoniously distributed, two cups of tea had been poured, and the waitstaff had finally left the room, Kitty said.
You must be a regular here.
I haven't been here in a while, but I thought it would be a convenient place for us to speak freely.
Do they always treat you this well?
Generally. It also helps that my family owns the land this tower is built on.
Kitty was quietly impressed. Even after becoming Mrs. Burnett Tye, she had never been treated with such reverence anywhere.
Now, do you really think that De Ayala's got thrown out of the club because of me?
I don't think. I know, Corinna answered. Ada Poon is on the membership committee.
But what does she have against me? I just made a huge donation to her husband's foundation.
Corinna sighed. This was going to be harder than she thought. I wasn't at the Pinnacle Ball, since I don't attend such affairs, but the very next morning my phone was ringing off the hook. Everyone was talking about what you did.
What did I do?
You gravely insulted the Poons.
I was just trying to be generous.
You may see it that way, but everyone there saw it differently. Sir Francis Poon is 86 years old, and he is revered by all. That award was his big moment, the culmination of decades of humanitarian work. But when you barge on stage and announce your big donation right in the middle of his speech, it was seen as a huge affront to him. You offended his family, his friends, and perhaps most important, his wife. It was supposed to be Ada's night too, and you stole the limelight from her.
It was never my intention to do that,
Kitty shot back. Be honest with yourself, Kitty.
Of course it was. You wanted all the attention on yourself, just like you did when you bought the Palace of 18 Perfections.
But while the crowd at Christie's might appreciate a good floor show, Hong Kong society does not. Your actions over the past few months are seen as nothing but blatant attempts to buy your way into the right crowd. Now, many people have done just that. But there's a right way to do it, and there's a wrong way.
Kitty was indignant.
Miss Ko Tong, I know exactly what I'm doing. Just do a Baidu search under my name. Look at all the magazines and newspapers. The bloggers and gossip columnists can't stop writing about me. My pictures are in all the magazines every month. I've totally changed my style over the past year, and in last week's Orange Daily, they ran 3 pages on my red carpet looks.
Corinna shook her head dismissively. Don't you see that those magazines are just exploiting you? Sure, the average reader of Orange Daily living in Yau Ma Tei must think your life is a dream come true. But at a certain level of Hong Kong society, it doesn't matter if you wear the finest couture and millions of dollars worth of diamonds. At this level, anyone can do that. Everyone is rich. Anyone can make a $20 million donation if they really want to. To these people, having your picture in the party pages all the time actually does more damage than good. It is seen as desperate. Trust me, being in tattle is not going to help your image. It won't get you a membership at the Lock Club, or an invitation to Mrs. Larduri's annual garden party at her villa in Repulse Bay. Kitty didn't know whether or not to believe her. How could this woman, who looked like her hair had been cut by some cheap hairdresser in Mong Kok, dare to give her advice on her image?
Mrs. Tye, let me tell you a bit about what I do.
I advise people who want to secure a place among Asia's elite, among the real people of influence.
With all due respect, I'm married to Bernard Tai. My husband is one of the richest men in the world. He's already influential.
Oh, really? Well, where is Bernard these days, then? Why is he not at all the functions I go to? Why wasn't he at the chief executive's lunch?
Refers to the chief executive of Hong Kong, who is supposedly the head of the government.
Honoring the 50 most influential leaders in Asia last Thursday? Or at the party that my mother threw for the Duchess of Oxbridge last night? Why weren't you there?
Kitty didn't know how to respond. She felt a wave of humiliation sweep over her. Mrs. Tai, if I may be very frank, the Tais have never had the best reputation. Dato Tai Tolu was a corporate raider from some Malay backwater. The other tycoons despised him. And now his son is seen as a ne'er-do-well party boy who inherited a fortune but hasn't worked a day in his life. Everyone knows Carol Tai still controls the purse strings. No one takes Bernard seriously, especially after he married a former porn star turned soap opera actress from mainland China. Kitty looked like she had been slapped in the face.
She opened her mouth to protest, but Corinna pressed on. I don't care what the truth is. I'm not here to judge you. But I feel that you need to know this is what everyone in Hong Kong has been saying about you. Everyone except Evangeline de Ayala, whom we both know is very new in town.
She was the first person who has been nice to me since I got married,
Kitty said sadly. She looked down at her napkin for a moment before continuing.
I'm not as stupid as you think. I know what people are saying. I've been treated horribly by everyone, and it started long before the Pinnacle Ball. I was seated next to Araminta Lee at the Victor and Rolf show in Paris last year, and she pretended like I didn't even exist. What have I done to deserve this? There are so many other socialites with murky pasts, much worse than mine. Why am I being singled out?
Corinna assessed Kitty for a few moments. She had expected her to be far more mercenary, and she was unprepared to discover the naivete of the girl sitting in front of her. Do you really want me to tell you?
Yes, please.
First of all, you are mainland Chinese. You know how most Hong Kongers feel about mainlanders. Like it or not, you have to work extra hard right out of the gate to overcome all the prejudices. But you handicapped yourself early on in the race. There's a whole crowd who will never forgive you for what you did to Alistair Ching.
Alistair?
Yes, Alistair Ching is immensely popular. When you broke his heart, you made enemies out of all the girls who have adored him and all the people who respect his family.
I didn't think Alistair's family was that special,
Corinna snorted. Didn't Alistair take you to Tyersall Park?
Tyre what?
My God, you never even got near the palace gates, did you?
What are you talking about? What palace?
Never mind. The point is, Alistair's mother is Alex Young. Because of her, Alistair is related to almost every important family in Asia. The Leongs of Malaysia, the aristocratic Xians, the Shangs who own practically everything. I'm sorry to have to break this to you, but you placed your bet on the wrong horse.
I had no idea,
Kitty said in a whisper.
How could you? You didn't grow up among these people. You've never been properly schooled in the ways of the manner born. Let me assure you, if we choose to work together, you will get the insider's view on everything. I will teach you the ins and outs of this world. I will share with you all the secrets of these families.
And how much is all this going to cost me?
Corinna took a leather folio out of her battered fur la tote bag and presented it to Kitty. I charge an annual retainer, and you are contractually obligated to sign on for a minimum of 2 years. Kitty looked over the schedule of fees and burst out laughing.
You've got to be joking.
Corinna's expression turned grave. She knew the moment had arrived for the hard sell.
Mrs. Tai, let me ask you something. What do you really want out of life? Because this is where I see your life heading. You'll keep flying around Asia for the next few years, going to galas and benefits and whatnot, getting your picture in the magazines. Over time, you might strike up friendships with other rich mainlanders or the Kuailo wives. This is a common Cantonese derogatory term usually applied to Caucasian foreigners, which literally translates as foreign devil. These days, many Hong Kongers frequently use the term to refer to foreigners in general and don't consider it derogatory.
Of men stationed here with 3-year contracts at some foreign bank or private equity firm. You might even be invited to join the boards of inconsequential charities started by these bored expat wives. Your inbox will be filled with invitations for cocktails at the Chopard Boutique or art openings in Shongwan. Sure, you may occasionally be invited to one of Pascal Pang's parties, but the real Hong Kong will always be close to you. You will never be asked to join the best clubs or attend the most exclusive parties in the best houses. And I'm not talking about Sunny Chin's mansion on Bowen Road. Your children will never get into the best schools and have playdates with children from the top families. You will never get to know any of the people who move the economy, who have the ear of the top politicians in Beijing, who affect culture, people who truly matter in Asia. How much is that worth to you?
Kitty remained silent.
Here, let me show you a few pictures, Karina said, placing an iPad on the table. As she began to scroll through an album of images, Kitty recognized a few of the city's top social figures posing casually with Karina in private settings. Here was Karina at breakfast on board the plane of a certain mainland tycoon who now lived in Singapore at the graduation of Leo Ming's son from St. George's School in Vancouver, in the delivery room at Matilda Hospital holding a famous Hong Kong socialite's newborn baby.
These are people you can introduce me to?
These are my clients.
Kitty's perfectly mascaraed eyes suddenly widened. Ada Poon? She's one of your clients?
Karina smiled. Let me show you a picture of what she looked like before I began working with her. For your eyes only.
Oh my God! Look at that outfit! And those teeth!
Kitty cackled. Yes. Dr. Chan did some of his best work ever on her teeth, didn't he? Did you know that before she became the third Mrs. Frances Poon, she worked in the Chanel boutique on Canton Road in Kowloon? That's how she met Frances. He came in looking for a little something for his wife, but left with a little something for himself.
How interesting. I thought she came from a good Hong Kong family.
Karina chose her words carefully. I can tell you about Ada's past because it's a well-known fact. But you see, practically anyone can rise up in Hong Kong society. It's all about perception, really, and the careful reinvention of personal history. We will refocus your image. Anyone can be forgiven. Anything can be forgotten.
So you will improve my image? You are going to help change Hong Kong's perception of me?
Mrs. Tai, I am going to change your life.
Chapter 10. Arcadia. Montecito, California, March 9, 2013. Rachel led her friends down the long hallway and opened a door.
Here it is, she said in a hushed tone,
gesturing for Go Pick Lin and Sylvia Wong Schwartz to look in. Pick Lin squealed as she caught her first glimpse of Rachel's wedding gown hanging on a vintage mannequin in the middle of the dressing room.
Oh, it's gorgeous! Absolutely gorgeous!
Sylvia walked around it, inspecting the dress from every angle.
It's nothing like what I was expecting, but it's beautiful. So you. I still can't believe Nick took you to Paris to shop for your dress and you ended up finding this at the Temporary Sample Sale in Soho.
I just didn't fall in love with anything in Paris. Every dress I saw this season was so over the top, and I really didn't want to deal with the fuss of a couture gown. You know, having to fly back and forth to Paris for all those fittings, Rachel said a little bashfully.
Oh, you poor thing. What torture, having to go to Paris for your fittings, Sylvia teased.
Peck Lin patted Sylvia on the arm.
I've known Rachel since she was 18. She's much too practical. We'll never change her.
At least, this dress looks like it could be haute couture.
Wait till you see it on. It's all about the way it drapes, Rachel said excitedly.
Sylvia narrowed her eyes.
That's not a typical Rachel Chu statement. We just might make a fashionista out of you yet.
Rachel's cousin Samantha, looking rather authoritative with a headset on, entered the room all flustered.
There you are. I've been searching everywhere for you. Everyone's arrived and we're all waiting to start the rehearsal.
Sorry, I didn't know you guys were waiting, Rachel replied.
Found the bride. We're on our way back.
Samantha barked into the headset as she shepherded the girls out of the main house and across the great lawn toward the Palladian-style music pavilion where the ceremony was to be held. Sylvia marveled at the mountains in the distance on one side of the lawn and the views of the Pacific Ocean on the other.
Tell me again how you guys found this amazing property?
We got really lucky. Nick's friend Mehmet told us about Arcadia. The owners are friends of his family. They only come here once a year for a few weeks in the summer and never lend the place out for events. But they made a special exception for us.
Is Mehmet the hunk with the stubble and those incredible hazel eyes? Samantha asked.
You got it. The Turkish Casanova, we call him, Rachel said.
Imagine how rich you have to be to maintain this huge estate all year to use it for just a few weeks,
Sylvia said in astonishment.
Speaking of rich, some of the women who just got here look like they stepped out of the pages of Vogue China. There's a tall, leggy supermodel type wearing boots that clearly cost more than my Prius. And there's another stunning girl in the most to-die-for linen shirt dress with such a posh English accent. Aunt Belinda already has her nose halfway up her hoo-ha, Samantha reported.
Rachel laughed. I'm guessing that Araminta Lee and Astrid Leong have arrived.
She goes by Araminta Koo these days, Peck Lin corrected.
Ooh, I can't wait to meet all these women I've been hearing so much about. It's gonna be like an issue of Vanity Fair magazine come to life,
Sylvia said gleefully. The ladies entered the Tuscan stone portico in front of the pavilion, where everyone involved in the wedding ceremony had assembled. The decorating crew was still putting the finishing touches to an intricate bamboo trellis, entwined with wisteria and jasmine, that led up the aisle to an arch where the couple would exchange their vows.
Belinda Chu rushed up to Rachel, looking rather distressed. Your floral designer promises that the wisteria will be at its peak tomorrow, just in time for the ceremony, but I'm not convinced. Look at how small some of these buds are. They won't be blooming for days. You'll need to put hair dryers on them.
You really should have used my guy, who does the flowers for all the best homes in Palo Alto.
I'm sure it will be just fine, Rachel said calmly, as she winked at Nick, who was standing in front of the arch talking to Mehmet, Astrid, and one of the crewmen. Astrid greeted Rachel warmly with a hug.
Everything looks so beautiful. It makes me want to get married all over again.
Nick's phone began to ring. Not recognizing the number, he ignored the call and put the phone on vibrate. The crewman standing next to Nick waved at Rachel shyly, and she realized with a start that it was Colin Koo. With a shock of dark hair grown out to his shoulders, she hadn't recognized him.
Look at you! Now you really look like a Polynesian surfer, Rachel exclaimed.
That's rad, Colin replied as he gave the bride-to-be a kiss on the cheek. Araminta, who stood out from the crowd in her vintage Yves Saint Laurent safari jacket and gold leather-caged thigh-high Gianvito Rossi sandals,
was next to greet Rachel with a double cheek kiss.
"That's the heiress whose wedding Rachel went to where all the trouble started," Auntie Jin murmured under her breath to Rachu.
"Who's the